Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. My name is David, and this is where we talk all things Star Wars, and we have a loaded show for you today. We are only 19 days away from The Mandalorian Season 2, and the more the time goes by, the more hyped I get. The more I think about it, the more I want to watch Season 1. I've been trying to watch Season 1, rewatch it, and it feels like I haven't spent enough time after watching it, kind of during my workday, just have it on in the background, look up now and then. But there's a lot of stuff in there that I think we should have connected to our Season 2 trailer viewing that we really didn't think of and didn't remember at the time. I know there was a mention of a Mon Cal planet, and of course, you know, in the Season 2 trailer, there's a water world, it looks like, and no one that I can remember or anything that I read connected the two, so I'm not quite sure. But yeah, The Mandalorian is so fresh and so new that we haven't had a lot of time to spend with it. And these days, unlike days of the 70s, 80s, 90s, there's so much going on, there's so much we're into. And there's just so much stuff out there. And I've been on such a huge Ewan McGregor kick lately. I talked about on the podcast that he was doing an Apple Plus series that's already out. They didn't release every single episode for the season, but I think they're up to episode 6 now or 5, somewhere around there. But it's a story of him and one of his good friends. They travel on electric motorcycles from the very south tip of South America, driving all the way through, going north, going up, and ending in Los Angeles. And of course, they made it, of course, because Ewan is safe and sound. And I totally did not know that he actually filmed his other two trips, Long Way Around, or Long Way Round, and Long Way Down. Long Way Round was from London to New York, going the long way around. And Long Way Down was Scotland, driving, riding his motorcycle to the tip of Africa, which, of course, you think the most dangerous spots in there would be kind of Mongolia, Russia. And that's exactly what I thought, and that's exactly what happened. If you watch the series, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's pretty entertaining. It really felt like, to me, it was kind of like old school MTV Road Rules back in the day. I saw the very first episode. I think I saw every single episode of Road Rules. I always anticipated that because I was always kind of intrigued by having a group of young people driving in RVs and giving them missions to do. Anyways, I digress. You need to really check them out. And they're all on Apple Plus. And I watched Long Way up until that last episode that was released. And then I watched Long Way Round. And it took me about 2 to 3 days, I think. I just kept it running on a loop. And then I watched the next series, and the first series actually took place between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So I don't know if, I guess it wasn't in his contract, in Ewan's contract, that he couldn't ride motorcycles. Usually it is the case for big time actors and big time movies and athletes that they cannot do any type of activity such as that, and skydiving or mountain climbing, anything to that effect. But he did it, and then in 2007, after Revenge of the Sith, of course, he did it again, and then in 2019, he filmed Long Way Up. But the reason why I bring up Ewan, and probably the reason why I kind of started looking up Ewan, I actually watched a couple of his movies that I had never seen before as well. But he was actually in the news. He did the Graham Norton Show, which is one of my favorite chat shows to watch. And I want to play an excerpt for you right now.
Here's the thing. So you are going back into Star Wars world. There's a... Yes. Is it an Obi-Wan Kenobi spin-off or just a Star Wars spin-off?
Yeah, it's the Obi-Wan Kenobi story, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah. So that's so it's you. It's all you.
Well, it's not all me, but it's certainly will be a lot of me, which is good.
And Shirley's looking forward to it already.
I'm ready.
We start shooting it in March next year. Yeah, we start.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Because I love Star Wars. Yeah. I know you're still a young man, but you're steadily getting closer to Alec Guinness's age in the original Star. Do you feel you have to be like look a bit more like he was in the first Star Wars movies? Because you're coming up on the outside track and you're catching him up now. Soon you'll be his age.
Yes, totally. I mean, the fun thing about doing them in the first place when I was much younger was trying to imagine Alec Guinness. How would he play these scenes as a younger guy? And it led me to watch a lot of his early work, which I hadn't seen before. Brilliant movies, wonderful films that he'd been in. And I just had such a great time sort of studying him in those movies. There was a great film called The Card that I'd never seen about a rag and bone man who ends up being a sort of mayor of a town or something. So this time, as you say, Frank, I'm much closer in age to him. And it will be my challenge to try and sort of meet him somewhere, you know. I love Alec Guinness. I never got to meet him, but I love him through his work. And it's a great honor to be able to sort of try and pretend to be him.
So the first interesting bit of that is that Ewan says, it's not entirely about me. Now, I'm not sure if I'm reading into this more so than I should be. Could be that, but I know we talked about on the podcast before that there's a lot of opportunity there to show scenes with Ewan and Hayden Christensen in the Clone Wars, in Ewan's nightmares, in his kind of just being in the desert and hallucinating. And I mean, there's a lot of opportunity there, and it really got me thinking that, man, Dave Filoni should be involved with this heavily and have some real live-action Clone Wars action happening. To me, if it doesn't happen, it's going to be a big missed opportunity. And I hope if Filoni isn't involved, which I don't think he is at this point, we get that writer writing in something where we get to see that aspect of the Clone Wars in live action. Hey, I mean, we all think we're going to get Ahsoka in season two. So, I mean, what better way to maybe de-age and make Rosario Dawson, who we think is going to be Ahsoka Tano, be younger, smaller, and actually see her in live action? I mean, that would be the best. That would be... It feels like such a slam dunk that if they don't do it, it's going to be a huge missed opportunity. To me, it's one of the most, it's probably the most anticipated idea that I have kind of had for the series, the TV series. And it's, there's so much to do there. I mean, I've talked about it so many times on the podcast. I mean, you can even include Vader. They don't have to meet, or they can meet. I mean, there's a way around the wording in A New Hope where Vader talks about it's a presence I haven't felt since. I mean, he doesn't name the time, so it's possible that they can maybe work that in, and maybe there is a lightsaber duel between the two, and Obi-Wan kind of injures Vader badly to the point where at the end of the series, he can't move as freely as he could before, because, I mean, there's all that opportunity in there to do something with Vader where he's a lot more athletic compared to his duel that he had on the bridge of the docking bay in the Death Star between Obi-Wan, old Obi-Wan, and old Anakin. George Lucas always talks about it. So we showed two old men fighting each other, and that wasn't like a big deal because the prequels were going to show us Jedi in their heyday. And yeah, I mean, when you look at that battle, it's not that great, but of course we have that redo that someone did where they basically did a face off of Alec Guinness and had someone in a Vader suit fighting, and it was a whole lot more choreographed, a whole lot more athletic, and there's it's a gold mine. I just feel like there's going to be a missed opportunity, possibly. But of course, we don't really know. I mean, they've gone through several different writers, so we shall see. And Ewan mentions March 2021 is when they're going to start shooting, so I think that's news as well. But of course, with the state of things, the state of the world, the pandemic, that could change. So I think we're all hoping for March 2021, and depending on how heavy special effects this is going to be, or maybe that might not be much of an issue since Lucasfilm, ILM, now has the experience of working from home during these past months with The Mandalorian Season 2. If that's not really even going to be a hiccup, might be a faster process because people are working from home. But hopefully, for me, I hope it's effects heavy. And I hope it's just not a character study of Obi-Wan in the desert. I mean, that'd still be cool, but I think we still need a light show, basically. We need starships, we need space, we need Obi-Wan basically to leave the planet. Unless that reference of not only will Obi-Wan be concentrated on, but other characters. Maybe there's another kind of story in there also weaved in. Maybe a love interest, I don't know. But I mean, we're all kind of really hoping that they do live action Clone Wars stuff and maybe bring in Duchess Satine. I mean, come on. That would be the best case scenario, I think. I mean, you kill two birds with one stone. I mean, come on. I mean, you'll bring in the old hardcore fans of the Clone Wars, and then the people that are just watching for Baby Yoda or watching because they have that high off the Mandalorian, and just fans of Star Wars that aren't as into it and haven't watched the animation and don't know the behind the scenes, they can watch that and reconnect with Clone Wars and watch the animation. I mean, it's there's so much that they could do. It's just, I wish I could be there at Lucasfilm and be the person like overseeing the whole thing like a Kevin Feige. I really hope that Favreau and Filoni kind of have a say in it, like I said. But March 2021, they should be filming, and hopefully Christmas will be the first episode. I mean, that's very feasible, but we'll see as time moves on. And the other cool thing that was brought up in this interview was the fact that Ewan McGregor is steadily getting closer to Alec Guinness's age. Alec Guinness was 62 when A New Hope started. Ewan McGregor will be 50. So he'll be 12 years younger. And all the way back in the 1900s when I was researching The Phantom Menace and finding out about this Ewan McGregor actor, which I still can remember clear as day on Entertainment Tonight when they announced that Ewan McGregor, the guy from, I forgot the name of the movie, but he was in a movie with Cameron Diaz, that he was cast. And I looked at his face and I was like, wow. That guy, he looks pretty close. And all the critics, it seemed like they were all kind of unanimously excited and agreed that, yeah, this is a good pick. And, of course, he was really young back then. And, I mean, it's so weird the things that we remember in life. But, yeah, that's one of the things I remember. And watching the that now super, like, well-loved and famous documentary Empire Dreams, and also the creation of The Phantom Menace, The Beginning, where Ewan McGregor talks about his studying of Alec Guinness and how he kind of watched A New Hope. He got the mannerisms down. I think it's universally kind of agreed upon that Ewan McGregor was the best thing to come out of The Phantom Menace. Aside from Darth Maul and the double-bladed lightsaber and the fight and Duel of Fates, Ewan McGregor's performance was spot on. Of course, Liam Neeson as well. And if we don't have Liam Neeson in the Obi-Wan series, I mean, that's another missed opportunity. But it's really cool to see that casting of Ewan McGregor has kind of given us this performance and is now giving us the future performance of Obi-Wan. It's just such a great thing. I love it when a franchise does something like this. They cast someone and they bring them back years later. But in the kind of weird timing sort of sense in Star Wars, I mean, Obi-Wan's older in the very first film in 1977, and now with Episode One, he was younger. Enough time has elapsed where Ewan McGregor can kind of, we can age him up a bit to look like Alec Guinness from A New Hope, but have him be young enough to where we'll probably see him more so when he's first starting his life off on Tatooine and watching over young Luke Skywalker. And of course, as it does, news broke on The Mandalorian Season 2 as far as the writers go. And I posted it on our Facebook group as soon as I possibly could. So for the first 1, 2, 3, 4 chapters, Jon Favreau wrote those episodes, those chapters. Then Dave Filoni wrote the 5th chapter, followed by Jon Favreau again. Then Rick Famuyiwa, who directed my favorite chapter of Season 1, which is Chapter 2. Then Jon Favreau finishes Season 2 off with Chapter 16, essentially, if they follow the chapters. So, I mean, it's kind of blatant in a way. Me and James were joking about it on Facebook that the chapter that Dave Filoni wrote, is that the introduction to maybe his beloved character? I don't know. It seems almost kind of too blatant in a way. But I'm hyped, man. It's gonna be interesting. I think that first episode, I think it's gonna be something different. And I think it's gonna deviate a lot. That's what I'm feeling. That's what my senses tell me. That's what my gut tells me, that we're gonna see a deviation here. And I know people have kind of alluded to the fact that people that think they know what's going to happen have kind of talked about something like that. And it really feels like, I don't know anything as far as what the stories are, but it feels like there's going to be some changes. But that Dave Filoni episode, that's going to be, I believe, the start of, I guess, December. So we might actually have to wait till December to see maybe some of his characters show up from his animated series. So that's actually kind of still a long wait. But, I mean, getting these episodes and rewatching Season 1 has been delightful. I mean, watching it on my MacBook, watching it on my 4K TV, I mean, you notice a lot of detail, and it's been enjoyable. For some reason, rewatching Season 1 wasn't as enjoyable as I thought it was going to be, but now kind of having this anticipation of Season 2, it's, for some reason, I'm just digging Season 1 more now. I don't know why. It's just maybe because I know we're going to get future episodes, probably 2-3 more seasons for The Mandalorian, as Giancarlo Esposito has alluded to. But yeah, I am hyped, like I said. It was Michael Giacchino's birthday yesterday, and I don't really talk about birthdays that much, but it was a good opportunity to talk about Michael Giacchino. I first kind of learned about him from the TV show Lost. I mean, the score, the music to that TV show was awesome. It was on point. And of course, it made me think about having him for Star Wars. And this was even before, I mean, we knew we were going to get more Star Wars films, but I thought, wow, this guy would be an awesome get if we do have movies, which of course I figured we were going to have movies. And of course, he scored Rogue One with only 4.5 weeks to do it because, of course, Andrew Desplat, he left the project. And it's not my favorite score, I'll be honest, but when you do research on it and find out about the technicality, I know if you're a big music nerd, you can see kind of the beauty in what he did He took previous music and kind of almost dissected it in a way and manipulated it to where I think he had some of the same notes, but it was kind of unrecognizable to the untrained ear in a sense, because I had no idea. The score for Rogue One sounded kind of bland, but once I found out what he did, what he was trying to do, I had kind of a new appreciation for the score. But of course, it wasn't, I'm not going to say it's my favorite, but I mean, 4.5 weeks to score a film. And he also did say that he kind of fell in love with the movie and it was super enjoyable. He was actually supposed to go on a vacation with his family, kind of like the same story with J.J. Abrams doing The Force Awakens. He was supposed to go away for a while, but instead of doing that, he did the film. He said there was no way he was going to pass up a Star Wars film. And he's super talented. He's been on many other projects. Spider-Man, Homecoming. He did J.J. Abrams' 2009 Star Trek. And he also won an Academy Award for Up. And like I said on the Facebook group, he's one Tony win away from getting the very coveted EGOT, which is an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. So all he has to do is do a musical, and hopefully he gets it. So I posted on the Facebook group that Del Rey was going to announce on October 6th 40 authors, 40 stories, 40 social cards, character reveals, scenes, story order, and more. And they did come through, and this is for the Certain Point of View series. Now, the first book, James read it completely. He talked about it, but on November 10th, they're going to release the new book, which is based around The Empire Strikes Back. And I'm super hyped for this, because the stories and A Certain Point of View, which I'm listening to currently on Audible, they talk about all the characters you would want them to talk about, I think. And Boba Fett, even L337, Yoda, Ugnaughts, all the bounty hunters that we know and love. And there's even a story with Jackson in it, the rabbit, Jackson the pilot, who is a rabbit humanoid. Before Jar Jar Binks was Jackson, who appeared in the comics, and I know he was kind of much maligned, and he was kind of pushed aside a lot, like I think the way Jar Jar Binks kind of was, and but of course not as huge as Jar Jar, but I think it's kind of wild. I never thought I'd see him appear in canon. This is a canonical book, so I'm really eager to check it out. I know when it comes out, I'll probably use one of my credits on Audible to download the book and just listen to it. But like I said, I'm listening currently to A Certain Point of View for Star Wars: A New Hope. And one of the interesting things I took from one of the first stories was about a Jawa that lives on Tatooine. I want to try and not spoil it for you, but I mean, it's incredible the world building that went into this particular story, because of course we saw A New Hope, and we saw the Jawas. They're tinkerers. They like to scavenge. And you ask yourself, you look at Tatooine, it looks just like endless deserts. What are they going to scavenge? I mean, there's nothing but the occasional shipwreck, the occasional bartering with farmers. But the way that Tatooine is described in the book, which makes a whole lot more sense now, is the fact that there's just such a huge layers and layers and layers of sand below the sand crawler that they travel in, that there's more sand on that planet downwards than there are, I believe, ships in the universe. And they talk about how many battles and how many things that are on that planet that are just waiting to be discovered. That I guess, I'm not sure how they come up. I don't think the Jawas dig them up, but I thought that was a very unique way to look at Tatooine, because I think everyone has that kind of viewpoint that Tatooine is just a desolate, just sand planet, but it's teeming with things within the sand. And these stories are pretty awesome. I know the first story was written by Gary Whitta, who was a writer for Rogue One, and it made sense, his story, because he had to do all that research to connect Rogue One to A New Hope, and it was beautiful. I mean, he probably just wrote it out freehand without any research, because he probably had already done all the research. It probably was ingrained in his mind. But some of these stories from The Empire Strikes Back, I think, are going to have the same type of effect. If you read the first or listened to the first story or the first book for A New Hope, I think we're all going to love The Empire Strikes Back version of A Certain Point of View. Other book news, I actually finally finished Lost Stars from Claudia Gray. The book was originally published on September 4th, 2015. It was a Journey to Star Wars and The Force Awakens, essentially, book that is hailed as one of the best books during the Disney era. And I was kind of blown away from what it actually was and where it took place. I guess some minor spoilers for the book if you haven't read it or listened to it on Audible. But it takes place during the original trilogy and basically ends at the Battle of Jakku. And I thought it was terrific. It interweaved into the events of the original trilogy, I think, perfectly, while standing alone as its own story with brand new characters and bringing in some familiar names. And it was just awesome. The planets, the names, the reactions. And we talk about A Certain Point of View, A Different Point of View type stories on the podcast, and how we can relive the original trilogy, but through different eyes. And that's essentially what this book is. It relives that time period, and it's pretty good. If you haven't read it, if you haven't listened to it, I strongly recommend you do so. But of course, most of you probably have, because the book is very old. But it's still one of Claudia Gray's best books. And I'm probably going to tackle the next Claudia Gray title I'll tackle, which is a tongue twister. It's probably going to be Bloodline. And I know that's another good one. James has talked about it as well. And I have some kind of idea as to what takes place. And it's kind of a political book, I believe. But yeah, I finally did it. I finally finished Lost Stars. And I kind of know what people are referencing now as far as that story goes, which is interesting. Like I said, I think there's 29 chapters. They're not very long chapters, but it's something you should totally, if you have time, invest your time in. There's also another book that actually has caught my attention that I don't think any of us have spoken about yet. Possibly we spoke about it, but it's a book called The Secret History of Star Wars, and on Audible it's narrated by, or read by, Josh Robert Thompson, who's actually one of my favorite Star Wars people out there. If you don't know who he is, he actually played Jeff the Skeleton on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. And of course, if you've been online, you've seen the deep fakes of George Lucas. It's basically Josh Robert Thompson doing the best impression you will hear of George Lucas. I mean, it's dead on. It's scary. And I know that George Lucas has seen the videos, his impersonation of him, and he loved it. it's of course a more heightened version of George Lucas. Sounds just like him, but of course he's kind of an over the top version, as over the top as he can be, with the George Lucas's monotone, a lot like mine. I guess I'm kind of monotone as well. But that's a book that I think I'll listen to a little bit every night. It'll probably be one of those books where I listen to once I get in bed. I start listening and I'll just probably fall asleep to it. But a book for me that was kind of like that as well, that I kind of really kind of cherish. And it was actually about the same time that Disney acquired, and I was kind of yearning for a Star Wars podcast, was the Jobs autobiography. And it kind of feels, from the sample I heard, a little bit like that. You get really a lot of inside baseball type stuff on the making of Star Wars. And I'm kind of interested to listen to this. And of course, I'll have a report. And on Patreon, I'll probably do a review of the book. And if it's great, I'll let you know, of course. If it's not, if it's mediocre, I'll let you know. But that's pretty much it for what we got today. Matt is traveling to Orlando to meet up with Colin, and they're going to go to Galaxy's Edge. And he's going to have video and probably do a podcast from Galaxy's Edge. So we'll be looking forward to that. We're, of course, we're going to put that on our Patreon. And the video, of course. And hopefully they do a podcast from Galaxy's Edge. I think that'd be pretty cool. I'm not sure if anyone has done a podcast from Galaxy's Edge. They need to try and maybe do it from the Falcon. I don't know. I'll bring it up to them. So that's it for this week. Like I say every single time, please help us out by rating us 5 stars and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Check us out on Patreon. We have a TikTok, Twitter at StuffPod. We have an Instagram account, Star Wars Stuff Podcast. And also, of course, Facebook. Our page is not really that active, but our Facebook group is. And of course, you can always email us at StarWarsStuffPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what your thoughts are. Let us know what you want us to know. And of course, may the Force be with you always. And this is the way.